I'm Jenny Bruski. When I'm not listening to ghost stories, I love giving new life to items that others may think of as junk, from mantles to furniture to entire rooms. I take what may have been forgotten and make it better than ever before. These are my projects, and this is Junkin' with Jenny.
That indeed it is. And here we are again, Junkin' with Jenny. Tony and Jenny Bruski joining you once again. On today's episode, we're going to show you how we created an entire built-in entertainment center from the ground up. Quite an excursion.
And it was our first time doing that.
It was. Also, a listener needs some ideas on how to give an aged chandelier a little bit of new life. So we'll take a look at that and some of the things that we've done, give you some insight on that. Also, think you need to just dump that collection of old encyclopedias? Well, think again. We have some ideas for that. Jenny's going to show you how she created some outdoor accent farm windows as well at a very low cost. And we'll take a look at how to give globes some new life. So lots of interesting things today on Junkin' with Jenny. It was fun. I was able to actually segue between pictures as I was talking. I'm getting more and more finger smart.
Good.
Is that a word?
I think it is now.
Maybe it is.
You just made it a thing.
I just made it a thing. So lots of interesting things on today's episode of Junkin' with Jenny. What have you been working on this last week of Junkin'?
Framing in some old windows.
Okay.
And the fun part about that is old windows are no longer square.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to get it just right and trimming them out to where they look like they're square, especially since there's four in a row,
mm-hmm.
is pretty fun.
Why are they not square anymore? What is the reason for that? Why would that be happening?
Wood warps and changes with humidity and different weather conditions. And most of the time, these old windows have long been replaced, but somebody's like, I'm not just going to get rid of these windows. Mm-hmm. So that's why you see a plethora of windows now at flea markets and antique malls. And, you know, when they sit for a long time, mm-hmm. it can put, you know, pressure on certain joints and they just get a little bit out of whack.
Sure. So they're up.
Mm-hmm.
Now you get some framing to do.
Got some framing to do.
And then what? Then is it done? Is it?
No, I mean, we've got to texture that wall and paint it first, and then we'll do the trim work.
And then we can do some pictures?
Yeah.
And then we can have it on the episode?
So I painted existing walls today, which is fun because I love the before and after, but they're existing walls, so they weren't usable.
Not
for the
as
show.
Fun. Did you do any murals at all?
Not this time. I've done murals.
You have done murals in our the kids' like playroom area years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I believe there was chipmunks.
It was a tree and it had a raccoon looking through a hole.
And there was squirrels.
And then there was hills with flowers. And
then off in the corner, it was really odd. There was a questionable chipmunk and a squirrel. And I don't know if one was giving one a piggyback ride to the other or what was going on in that part of the mural.
They were making a churl.
Okay. That was questionable. Mm-hmm. A churl.
A churl.
I've seen some of those here in the woods.
Chipmunk squirrel.
Unfortunately, they can't reproduce when you do that. It's just, it's like a one-time animal.
Yeah, kind of like a mule. Mules
exactly. It's a sterile animal.
Yep.
So just so you know, if you ever see a churl, that's
it's totally made up. We just made that up.
I'm gonna Google that soon and see if that's ever actually happened in nature.
I don't think that happened in nature, and there was no obscene animal play in the playroom. So
No, there wasn't. So there you go. If you want to have us take a look at your object, your item, your space, give you some feedback on it. So what you're going to do for a lot of folks today on the episode, all you have to do is send it to us. Go to the website, junkinwithjenny.com. If you're listening to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, please press subscribe. That helps us greatly. And also check out the website because there's a video version of this episode up there. So once you listen to it in the car or wherever you're at, you can waste some time at the office then and check out some of the images and the stuff we're actually talking about. So that's all up there.
I wish there'd been this kind of thing to waste time in board meetings when I was in meetings.
Oh, yeah.
When I worked outside
of
what we do now.
Mm-hmm.
Waste of time.
I remember how exciting it was to have YouTube.
Like
when YouTube really kind of came about. I remember the first time I used YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the basement of a radio station. And it was the last station I worked at because I was there for a good, almost 10 years?
Yeah, 10 years.
And so at the beginning of that, mm-hmm. YouTube had just kind of come into existence. And I remember just sitting down at the computer one day going, I'm going to check out this YouTube thing and see what it's all about. And just being blown away that you could, I mean, streaming video existed, but prior to YouTube, a lot of it was kind of clunky. Mm-hmm. You know, it was services had it, but it didn't work all that wonderfully. Mm-hmm. A lot of buffering, and even YouTube buffered quite a bit at the beginning. But there was nothing like that where it's like, oh my God, there's like all this plethora of junk that everyone has on their hard drive is now here or on their old VHS tapes is showing up online. It's still amazing for that reason of just the stuff that shows up. And now this, you know, we can do things like this. Yeah. So that concept and how quickly that has changed over the years is kind of amazing to me. Let's go to our first thing that we are going to talk about today. And this is the Entertainment Center. Mm-hmm. And initially, what we were dealing with would be, I'd say, we had a large basement space, finished off.
Yes.
But kind of roller rink-ish.
It was finished, yet unfinished.
Yeah, I mean, it was just so much space. And not that we're complaining about the space. It was just a very big, open space. And you don't really know what to do with it. We kind of had couch and some chairs in the middle because that's where it kind of seemed to fit. Mm-hmm. We had the bar off on one side. There was the pool table way over there, some games over in that corner, and another TV. We had like a projector screen up, and it was just like everything was going on.
All in the same space.
Yeah.
And I've said it before on the show that an abundance of space can be as detrimental as not enough space.
Yeah.
So we were trying to figure out one evening how we could make smarter use of what we had.
Yeah.
And we started talking about, you started bringing up the idea of different, you know, dividing things out. And the basement had been kind of neglected since we moved in. We've only been in the house a little over a year, but it was our catch-all for everything during projects. It was also kind of the space where we went down and we entertained and we had people over because it was a big space, but we really didn't use it any other time because neither one of us were real happy with it. You always liked the kind of dark and cozy feel, and you wanted that for the bar area. And I like light and bright for the living area. And so we both compromised on that for the basement that we had with everything in one room, and neither one of us were happy. So what we thought was, let's just divide it out. And, you know, having a bar separate from the main living space is a good idea as kids get older and become inquisitive.
Yeah.
Being able to lock that off.
It was one of those things where everyone's knocking down walls. We put up walls.
Yes.
To seclude the space a bit. But even the spaces that are now secluded, everything still feels big, which is good. But it feels right big. And comfortable, big. We did levels, Jerry. Levels. not levels, but walls. So basically, what we had here, and I'm going to show a picture of kind of what the space looked like. And what you're seeing on screen here, where that door is where the projector screen was. I'd already kind of moved it over to where we were going to be putting it. And then we basically decided, okay, what are we going to do on this wall other than just the projector screen? And we thought, you know, some sort of, you know, entertainment center type thing, because that's really what this is going to be. It's going to be a place where the TV is going to be, or the projector is going to be shooting at, and, you know, cabinets of some sort. And the thing is, it's a pretty big screen, and finding an entertainment center that fits that, and then finding an entertainment center or something that is going to be reasonably priced,
right,
that fits that space, and then actually fits the room as well. Kind of a difficult thing. It's like you're not either going to get one or the other, and neither is going to be very satisfactory.
No.
So what we ended up doing is we were sitting down trying to figure out, okay, what's it going to cost to have a contractor build some walls for us? Because we had yet to do a wall.
Right.
And it was kind of an intimidating thing. We've done a lot of stuff, but we had yet to actually build a wall. Mm-hmm. And the first thought was, well, what if we just, first of all, we asked for a bid. We didn't get a bid, but what we thought, well, while we're waiting, because I know they're kind of backed up, what if we just try building one wall?
With the safety net of a good contractor that we know of.
He's got, could fix it.
He's got quite a time lapse between projects as far as how long we're talking. And we're neither one of us patient people. Yeah. So we thought, you know, we've seen so many walls be built in our house. And I know that that's not the same as doing it. But we thought, you know, we don't. We've got a space where we can put one up, and it doesn't have to be load bearing or anything. It's just purely just a division.
So
we tried it, and we did a lot of research, and you know, watched how you do it, and we learned the hard way, and we got some walls up.
And I don't even think there was much of a hard way to it. I mean, we learned. I wouldn't even say we learned the hard way. Like, isn't a bad thing.
Well, I just mean that we learned that sometimes if your wall, if your ceiling is higher than your standard stud length. How to deal with that.
Oh, sure, sure.
That plumb bobs are stupid fuckers. And
I think it's the first time anyone has sworn on this show, and I think you're the one to do it. So congratulations.
Whatever. It's Junkin' with Jenny.
There you go.
I get the point of a plumb bob, but we could not.
Mm-hmm. It was difficult.
We could not make it.
Yeah.
When we used it and we got everything the way we were supposed to with the plumb bob, it did not look right.
Yeah. And a plumb bob, if you're not familiar with the term, which I wasn't until a couple of weeks ago, it's a weight that you hang from the top board once you affix it to your ceiling to measure out where the bottom board should be at center.
To make sure that they line up.
So that when you put your beams on there, you don't have like a crooked wall or something of that nature. And it was difficult. We got it to kind of work on the on this initial wall that we did. Then as we went on with the rest of the walls that we ended up putting up, it just got more frustrating than it was satisfying. And we ended up finding kind of some other ways of getting the walls up and plumb, that, if you will.
We went and bought the big kid level that's 4 foot long.
And that seemed to help quite a bit.
That helped a ton.
So it really wasn't hard to get the wall up. Did a little YouTubing of trying to find, okay, how do you build the wall, 16 on center, your beams. Spend 10 minutes YouTubing this, and you will know how to make a wall. It's really not that complicated.
Well, you'll know, in theory, how to make a wall.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take years and years and years worth of practice to do it to the level of what home builders do. So I'm not saying that any idiot in 10 minutes can do a wall.
But I'm not saying go build a house.
No.
But you can probably put up a divider wall if you want to at the end of that and be fairly satisfied with the results.
Right.
That's kind of what I'm meaning. So got that up. Once the wall was up, it came time to do some decorating and affixing. Mm-hmm. And going back to the entertainment center thing, neither of them were going to be the options of finding one at a store. So what did we do? We went and found basically some cabinets.
Yeah.
Unfinished. Just what are these? Pine? What are they made out of? Oak?
They're oak. Okay. These are off-the-shelf oak unfinished cabinets, and they're actually wall cabinets.
Yeah.
Now, wall cabinets for the kitchen and base cabinets for people who haven't done a remodel or haven't really, you know, thought about it. Wall cabinets are 12 inches deep, but base cabinets that you put your countertop on are 25. And I just didn't think that we needed that full depth for what we were doing. We're not putting it in a kitchen. So I opted for using wall cabinets as my base. And it was a cheaper option because they obviously aren't as large.
Yeah, and they are relatively reasonably priced. If you just kind of look around a couple of different stores, wait for a sale maybe if you're planning on doing this to get them even at a better price.
Sure.
But very reasonable for a whole line of cabinetry. Mm-hmm. And that can be confusing because sometimes you think, oh God, cabinets are going to be expensive. I think we spent under $300 for all of those cabinets, a whole row.
Yes, and there's six of them and they're 30 inches wide.
So, and then we just did you really did the painting of them and the finishing of them. So we got them screwed into the studs, not a hard thing to do, and elevated them up a little bit so they weren't just directly on the ground.
Yeah, we created kind of a toe kick to give it also a base so that it's not flat on the ground. Because, you know, if you put carpet in there later, the doors are going to drag on that.
Sure.
It's just good to get them up a little bit. And we did it high enough to where we could put the trim that's going around the rest of the room under the cabinets as well, just to really have that built-in look.
Finished it off a little bit more with some hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And there you have it. That's the bottom of this unit. Now, there's the shelving there that looks a little more complex. But I was really surprised. I walked out one day and you had built shelves.
I just went and got lumber and did it.
Like, oh my God, how did you do that?
I found a new tool, and it's not really a new tool, but it was new to me. I'd heard of them, but I'd never used it, and it's a Craig jig. And if nothing else you get from this show, take away Craig Jig, K-R-E-G.
I'm glad you spelled it.
Because it is amazing for any type of finished wood product that you're going to do, like if you're building a tabletop or, you know, cabinetry, things like that. You want to have the ability to attach boards together without having screws through the front or having a cross piece. And this is a very professional way to attach boards together. So this Craig Jig goes in the end of your board and it drills a hole at an angle so that when you put a screw through that, it will kind of screw at an angle into the next board that you're attaching to. And both of those are hidden. You attach it on the underside. And I don't know if any of the shots show the Craig Jig holes.
I don't have that.
But that's definitely something to look at. But I just had two upright pieces, and I made them the height between the top of the countertop, which was just more pine that I painted, and the ceiling. So I had my uppers and my uprights, and then I just made, I think, three shelves. It's three shelves plus the top, so four pieces that were the same width. And, you know, that obviously varies upon what how large you want it. And then lay it down and attach it to where you have essentially shelves, and it's pretty self-explanatory. But using that jig, that was one of the best things because that really made a strong bond on holding those shelves together without having any screws through the outside of the outer piece.
At an angle or something.
So it was pretty easy. They're pretty, I guess they're pretty basic, but we built them and then we trimmed them out with 1x2 trim because I just wanted them to have a beefier look.
And that's at the very top you see that. And I think that's one of those things you look at this and go, that looks a little bit more than basic, you know, but the thing is, I mean, sometimes it's those simple things like those trim pieces that if you're unaware of how to do some of this stuff, that's almost what sets it apart from being, oh, did you make that? You know, you made that, you know, that's the difference in tone, you know, that you get out of it just by some of those small finishing touches that you can put on stuff.
And, you know, I kind of got the idea from a lot of people that go to IKEA and get the basic shelvings, systems there, and then they bring it home and they trim it out to make it look built in. Unfortunately, our closest IKEA is 3 hours away and it's like $400 in shipping for one of those units. So we just decided to do the homemade route for a fraction of the price.
And it turned out really well. That is another option though. If somebody doesn't want to mess with trying to build the cabinets, the shelves, if the cabinets is within the wheelhouse, but the shelves may be a bit beyond it, that's a good option. There's other options you could take a look at even beyond this, like the Target option. Target had some, or really any store, for a lot of big box stores have shelving units similar to that, that are, you know, the stackable type. You get those installed. A little bit of trimming is very easy to do. To kind of make it look a step beyond.
I really wanted on these, I wanted a very simple trim to kind of go with the cabinet doors. But, you know, if your cabinet doors, if you go for a different style of cabinet, if they're more ornate, you know, trim accordingly. Trim that is in the same style. I just like the very plain and simple lines of it. But you can dress it up as much as you want.
And in the back of the cabinets, you accented it with the peel and stick wallpaper.
Yep, that was a Target find, and I'm very happy with that.
This is not an ad for Target. They're not a sponsor of the show or anything. We're just sourcing where we got some of our stuff. And that was, how would you say that, you know, the difficulty level of getting that up was? Obviously, that's the first thing you put up before you put the cabinets up.
Yeah. Well, being that I had to line up the piece directly to where the edges were covered by the shelves, that part was difficult. The sticking up of the wallpaper itself was not difficult at all.
Just the measuring, making sure it's going to line up correctly so it's not sticking out.
And not getting it started at an angle to where the whole piece is at an angle.
Of course.
You know, I would say just a little practice. And the good thing about this removable wallpaper is you can take it off and reapply it as many times as you want. It's just literally you peel it off. It's like vinyl decal quotes that people put up on the wall. It's the same material, so if you don't get it right the first time, just pull it off until you get it just right.
And that to me is amazing. Like, I really want to try this in 10 years, rip it off and see if I can put it up somewhere else.
Bet you can.
I'm just curious, how are you saying rip it off and take it off like during the application or like forever?
Forever.
I'm going to try this. I'm just going to stick a piece of wallpaper on some wall in the house, and you're going to be mad about it. I'm like, why is this wallpaper here?
I won't be mad about
10 years it's sitting there in the middle of the living room where you're going to do something else.
I won't be mad about it. I've got a spot that I'm thinking about actually venturing out and doing more wallpaper.
Okay.
With.
Well, then I wasn't doing anything else with it. I'm just going to stick a random piece of wallpaper, maybe even like kind of off center and kind of at a slight angle.
No.
And it'll be straight lines too, so it really stands.
Not in my house.
Just curious to see what would happen with the wallpaper. I'll probably be dead for doing that in 10 years. but someone can find out what that turns into. And then, of course, in the middle, that is, in fact, the screen. And we were kind of debating what to do here for the screen. The initial thought was get a screen, like a projector screen, and because we had the one, cut it out, affix it to the wall. That's what we've done in the past on walls that we couldn't have be completely flat.
Right.
And here we had the option. We had a completely flat wall. And we did a little research on what existed in terms of projector paint. And there's some companies out there. I'm sure they make a good product, but it's an expensive product. Just like a gallon of it or less was more than $100. And I was just thinking, yeah, sure. Like Sherwin-Williams can't mix something up that's really close to this. And again, we don't have the two to compare back to back.
No, we don't.
So it's difficult to say that the projector paint stuff isn't 100 times better. But for my viewing enjoyment, and I think everyone else's, what we ended up getting from the store, the paint store, just the regular old paint store, sure as heck works for me.
Well, and, you know, what we had experience with were the professional screens that you can hang on the wall. So compared to that and what we're used to seeing,
it's just as good as a professional screen.
It is. Yeah. But we did not opt for the $100 plus paint because, you know, we wanted to see what we could do and try something less expensive first. That's my thing is let's try the less expensive route first and see if we're satisfied.
And it wasn't just flat white. It was a specific one that they...
It's a highly reflective white.
Okay.
And that is going to reflect the light back at you as much as possible. And the color is just bright white.
Is it flat? Is it an eggshell?
It is flat.
Okay.
They also have it in matte. Matte has a little bit of a tiny bit of a sheen to it. I don't know that you would really notice it, but flat is probably best so that you don't have, you know, spots, especially if you have, you know, a wall that's like a normal wall where you're going to have little tiny imperfections because any sheen will pick up on those it will reflect onto those little imperfections.
Well, plus, too, I think if you're watching it in daytime and you don't have a dedicated dark room for this, which this is not a dark room. If you get it too shiny, I think you're going to run into difficulty seeing it in daytime because it's going to be too reflective. And that way, this literally there's windows surrounding this whole area. And we can turn that projector on in the middle of the day and you can still see it just fine. So I wouldn't necessarily say you need to go the route of the super duper projector paint. Could if you want to spend some more money.
And I don't know, honestly, if there isn't an option that Lowe's has, because Lowe's now carries Sherwin-Williams paints. They don't carry everything.
Yeah.
But that may be an option. I would go talk to them first if you don't have a Sherwin-Williams store nearby.
Okay. So there's some ideas, and that's essentially how we did this, the entertainment center wall. And on this picture you're seeing on the screen, as the wall progresses out the direction beyond the wall right there, the room continues. And behind that is another room that we created that's going to be like a study room for the kids. And then on the other side of that is the bar that I've been working on. And we'll show more of that on a future episode. You guys have already seen, I think, the bar back last week, but the bar in whole, I did a lot of shiplap in there over the last weekend. And I'm not done with it because I'm wrapping kind of a not really a beam, but I'm wrapping where there's
a
soffit, an HVAC piece, and a whole wall near the fogged windows that we just did, the antique windows. So it's really going to feel like a pub, and we're calling it the local haunt. Yes.
Yeah.
And we're actually going to use that area not only for a segment here on this show, but when we do Facebook Live sessions with our other show, Real Ghost Stories Online, and maybe probably with this show too. It's just going to be a nice, cool setting for some Facebook Live stuff.
Yeah.
So we'll be showing that on a future episode of the program. So watch this space. Let's go to our next item. This is a letter that we got in, and I'm going to put the picture up on screen. And I think everybody has one of these either in their attic or they have a relative that goes, "I'm getting rid of this. Would you like it? And you just kind of go, "Oh God, I don't think so." but before you say that, stick around for this segment. Letter says, "Hi, Tony and Jenny. I just purchased my, my first house. And I'm discovering the joy of fixing and changing things to my taste. It's not cheap. I'm trying to figure out what I can do with the existing parts of this house that can be reused. The dining area has this old golden chandelier hanging in it. It's really outdated, but it's a solid piece, and I feel guilty just throwing it out. Are there any things I can do to it to give it new life?" Well, yes.
There are.
We've done it.
A couple of times.
Yeah, a couple different ways. Let's start with the first one that we have, the rusted out one.
Yeah.
And let's take a look at this. And this initially, I don't have a before on this, but you can easily picture it. This was a very similar type style. There's a few less light bulbs on it. But this is, again, it's one of those brass hanging chandeliers of the late 80s, early 90s.
1995 special.
Yeah, that everybody had. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this maybe had some sort of umbrella or something or whatever on top of the light bulbs that was removed. and what we ended up doing was putting Edison-type bulbs in where the lights are. And you can find some nice ones like that. I would suggest going with the LED version if you can now, because they make a really good one that looks authentic. It doesn't look like, oh, you got the LED version of that. They're a little more pricey, but they'll probably last you 10 years longer.
Oh, yeah.
Because the regular Edisons go out just as quick as your old school light bulbs, mm-hmm. and they're not cheap. So a couple extra bucks, if you can spare it, is probably going to pay for itself 10 times over.
Your cost in your LED Edison bulbs is going to be cheaper than by far than a new fixture.
Exactly. And it is a little more pricey than a normal bulb to begin with, but just trust me, it will go out quick. And then you have to go back and get another one and another one. And then by the time you count that up for 10 years, mm-hmm. You're going to paying $100 a bulb versus pay the 10 or whatever it is for this. And you can usually get a pack with a couple in for that. So I would suggest going down that route. So, what exactly, beyond the light bulb, obviously, how do you take it from the beautiful brass, mm-hmm. Beautiful, bountiful brass, beautiful, bodacious, bountiful brass,
yes,
to this rusty, and the picture I have right now has cobwebs on it. We don't normally have cobwebs on it in our house. This is just for Halloween. We're decorating a bit, but it sure fits the fixture.
We start decorating for Halloween. Yeah. Very early for obvious reasons,
yes.
being that
our other show's about ghosts.
Our life is Halloween every day. But
how do you take it from the brass to this?
Do you remember a few shows back we talked about changing things from looking like anything to copper and then to aged copper?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there is a similar product that does that for making things look rusted. And this is not it, but this is the same company, mm-hmm. Modern Masters Metal Effects.
Mm-hmm.
They have one that is an iron paint. With that one, you need to get the primer that goes with it. They have that on their website. I think you can also, we got ours off of Amazon, but that was a few years ago. I think it may still be available on Amazon. But there's a primer that goes with this iron paint. And the reason you want to use that, it will stop the rust from eating through the actual metal,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, compromising the quality and integrity of the light fixture itself.
So you can't just rust the thing.
It's real rust. It doesn't, it's not just looking like mm-hmm. rust. It is actively oxidizing this iron paint to make rust.
So it is creating rust. It's the way that you make this a lifelong fixture
mm-hmm.
is stopping the rust.
Yes. So it's a primer, and the one that we got was a white primer,
mm-hmm.
and you coat everything with the white primer first,
mm-hmm.
let it dry. Then you go back with the iron paint. And I will tell you, the iron paint is very thick. It's a little bit difficult to work with. Some spots go on heavier than others, and that is okay. That is how you get that imperfect look. But I would coat it a couple of times, then you let it dry, and then there is a solution that you get that changes it over to rust. And you can spray it on, or you can paint it on, whatever you prefer to do. And you can rust it out as much or as little as you want. If you just want rust in certain spots and mainly leave it black, you can do that. Or if you want the whole thing completely rusted like ours, just go to town with it.
I like doing this shit like marshmallows, you know, where it's like you burn the hell out of it. If I'm going to rust something, I want it rusted good.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I am on. At least that's my taste. But anybody can do anything they want with it. It is a really, really neat product. Another chandelier that we did this stuff to is the one that is in the bar. And you'll see more of this on a future episode. But again, this was another 1995 special chandelier. And we didn't rust it this time. We just did some paint.
We did. We used aged bronze spray paint.
Yeah.
And with that, Rust-Oleum makes a lot of different finishes. You can get a hammered look. You can get, you know, a matte look. You can get a shiny look. Whatever to go with your look that you're going for. And I just kind of like the look of old black metal. And that was, I wanted very industrial looking. So we just took it out. Took it apart, spray painted all the little pieces and all the, you know, the big chandelier part itself. Mm-hmm. I forgot, but there were a lot of little pieces that went with that. Yeah. I think that kind of go by the light bulb, but you want to get everything covered. And that stuff, you don't need to prime or anything. It just goes right on the metal and stays right on the metal. It doesn't flake off unless you, you know, ding it or touch it a lot. But for a chandelier, you're not really going to be touching it except maybe to change the light bulbs.
And I was initially thinking, well, I want to rust this one out too, because this was originally just over our pool table, and then we changed where that all was, and I decided to move the bar over to that area. And I thought, I want the rusty chandelier, but really, this one just fit it so well with the paint, and I thought, this already looks cool. I like it. And I think another neat thing you can do with these older chandeliers is don't get stuck thinking that the light bulbs that came with it or that you've been buying for it or you found on it are your only option. You can go with some really neat changes to that. Like these. I love the little round balls on this. It's unexpected.
It is.
And it's fun.
It's unexpected and fun, and it can change the personality of a lamp very, very quickly. It's kind of like, you know, the shoes make the outfit, the bulbs make the chandelier.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, they even have ones now that I want to get, but they are a flicker flame that mimic the look of an actual burning light. And I've not seen them in person, but I've seen them all over the place. And I'm going to get some, but for something like this, that would be a really neat effect.
Are they a step up from the ones that were in like the Christmas decorations in 1993, where it's like... I can't, you know, it's just very, very obviously not a real flame.
I hope so. Okay. I think they are closer to the technology that they use in the flameless candles now. But I've not, like I said, I've not seen them in person. But I have some light fixtures out by our front door that I would love to put those in and make it look like they're gas lights.
Yeah.
But I'm going to have to just bite the bullet and get some and let y'all know how they went.
That'd be a good thing for a future episode here of the show. So there you go. There's some ideas on what to do with the 1995 special chandelier. Hopefully that helped you out a little bit.
Yeah.
Our next one, this is an interesting one. Hi, Tony and Jenny. My mother recently dropped off my old collection of World Book Encyclopedias they got me as a kid. Needless to say, they're quite outdated and just take up a lot of space. They spent a lot of money on these at the time, and I have a lot of great memories paging through these pre-internet days. Do you have any idea what I could do with these? This big old stack of World Book Encyclopedias, and I'm trying to pull it up because I pulled up the wrong thing. There you go. Pull up like a couch and those encyclopedias. So there we go. There's the encyclopedias. If you are a child... of the 90s, of the 80s, you remember these things. They lined the libraries of our schools. A lot of people had them lining the walls of their rooms, too. And there was actually salespeople that would go out and sell these things door to door. I never had them, but I loved looking at the encyclopedia. It was our version of surfing the web, if you will, before there was a web to search.
Right.
I can tell you countless times during library time in junior high or even grade school, especially, where I had nothing else to do. I didn't want to go look for books. I would just grab an edition of the encyclopedia and just sit there and page through it. Mm-hmm. And I too have a lot of fond memories of that. And if I had a bunch, I would feel bad too, like just dumping them. And they're probably not worth, I don't think they're worth much. I could be wrong. What would you do with just this big old stack of books? Because depending how in depth they have, I mean, some of those libraries could get to be, you know, damn near 3 feet tall if depending on how much you have. And honestly, the picture we have here gets cut off because it's so many. So I'm thinking you probably got at least 2 or 3 feet of books here to work with.
I had a couple of ideas.
Okay.
One of which was not really mine. I saw this used for other old books in general, not necessarily encyclopedias, but they were made into shelves.
Okay.
And the way that it was done was very simple, by affixing two L brackets to the wall where, you know, it's up and down against the wall and then sticks out.
Sure.
And then you can set 3 or 4 encyclopedias on there to cover that L bracket. And then you have a small floating shelf.
Of books. That's a neat idea.
It looks like they're just hanging on the wall.
Yeah.
But if you do that, obviously you want to make sure you either use a stud to affix it to or use proper anchors, because those books are heavy.
Sure.
And you can, you know, kind of make a design out of your different shelves. I just thought that was neat for an office or a study. Then another one that I really like too would be to take, you know, take 6, maybe even 9 of them that, you know, you have a special page that you really like or something and open it to that and then hang it on the wall, nail it into the wall, open to those pages and do it like in a grid. So,
okay. So it's kind of like almost a mosaic type thing, but, but like evenly spaced.
I would do 3 up by 3 wide.
Do some really interesting ones.
Yeah. I would, you know.
Pick horrible, like, disasters.
I know you
OJ, all sorts of great stuff.
My encyclopedias as a kid were actually my dad's when he was a kid.
Oh, wow.
Mine were from the 60s. So some of the information in there was not necessarily correct anymore.
Sure.
But that was sure interesting to go and look at.
I bet. What I would do with it is, if I had the tall stack, if I had the Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruity thick stack of pancake books here.
Okay.
I would, I'd be, and I know I talk about lamps a lot, but this would make a really neat lamp. Literally, you would be rooting the books.
You'd have to
drill through all of them. You'd have to go one by one and then affix them to each other. Mm-hmm. You probably would have to do it with some sort of very thick glue, because I don't think you could necessarily, I think drilling would screw the pages up even worse and it'd be very uneven. I think you'd probably have to stack and glue them together, and you need a special bit on your drill to get a wide enough hole in this. You can't just go in with a wide bit drill. You would need that special one that kind of has the hollow.
Sure.
And you'd probably have to clasp each of the books down to something, so when you're drilling through, it's not a mess. And actually pretty sharp too. So new pieces is what I would do. Drill through each book and just stack them one by one. You're not going to be able to go through like 3 books at a time. At least I wouldn't suggest doing that.
No.
And one by one, glue them as you go and affix them as you go. You probably may need some extra support in there. You may need to get something, at least on the sides, some sort of like metal or something to keep it kind of even and held up. And you'll need a wider base to put it on too, to balance it. But I think if you were to do that, it would take a little bit of work, but I don't think it would take a whole lot of, there'd just be a little bit of trial and error. I don't think it really would take a whole lot of special equipment or anything like that. Once you get that done, you got your hole that's even all the way through. And I would kind of wouldn't make the books necessarily evenly keel all the way up. I'd kind of
twist it.
I'd twist it around a little bit, or even just keep them straight, but kind of off center a little bit.
Sure.
And so it kind of has a little bit of character to it going up and down. And then from there, all you need is a lamp kit, really. Get your lamp kit, and it's kind of like making a soda bottle lamp. And then you install the lamp kit. The instructions are on the back of that, or a gazillion YouTube videos on it. And, you know, a fairly tall shade, and probably need a fairly big one to accent something of that stature. Sure. To really give it some justice. But I think you could find, there's some really neat shades out there that you can find. I would suggest trying to find one, you know, that has writing on it.
Yeah.
To really make it work. If you're really ambitious, you can get a fairly plain shade and you could like decoupage it with actual pages. The only issue with that is it might not be, it might be too dark to get through. And then you kind of have like a dimly lit lamp, which if that's what you want, you could do. There's a lot of ways of doing this, but I would try and pick a shade that has some character to it as well, just as much as your lamp base does.
Sure.
And I think that could be a really neat lamp for, you know, really almost any room, obviously like a study or something would be really cool, or an office. But you could just as easily put it into a family room or a living room of some sort as a really neat, you know, piece to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would do.
Another one.
Another one?
Just thought of.
Okay.
You can make
paper airplanes.
Two ends of a coffee table to support. You take.
Oh, that is a good idea.
Stacked.
Yeah.
And because I was thinking about how you were drilling through for the lamp.
Yeah.
But you could stack half on one side, half on the other, and then put a board on top and fix it together. And
I like that.
A coffee table.
That is a cool idea. There you go. World book. Coffee table.
Cheap furniture.
If anybody makes any of the stuff we talk about, please send us the pictures of it, because we'd love to see how any of this turns out if you guys do jump in and create any of these things. The next letter that we got in, like I said, if you want to get some advice, some suggestions on your stuff, send it in to us on the website, junkinwithjenny.com. It's also where you can see before and after pictures, videos, and a whole lot more. So do check that out. Full episodes of the show there in Technicolor. Next letter says, I recently inherited my grandparents' collection of globes. I had no idea they had so many. They fit perfectly in my grandfather's dark office space, but not so much in my more modern office space. I don't want to get rid of these, but I don't know of a practical use for them without looking very out of place. Any suggestions? Here.
Anything that you need to use a spear shape, like bowls are kind of half spear.
Yeah.
You can use a globe, because globes you can cut in half easily. Usually around the middle, there's like a thin piece of tape that holds them all together.
And they untwist or pop out.
Mine was attached.
Okay.
It had a seam,
sure.
But you could easily cut it in half. I really thought, and I know we've already done pendant light covers, but cut it in half and use it as a pendant light cover.
Mm-hmm.
My other thought was seal them with any kind of clear protectant and use them as bowls. Granted, there's going to be a hole in the bottom, so you'd have to really kind of pay attention to what you're putting in there, but it'd be neat setting on a table with stuff in it.
There's a hole in my globe, dear Jenny.
It would be perfect for popcorn, because the kernels would fall out.
It would be. You seal it upright and protect it. But it could be a kind of a cool globe. You probably need something, you know, did you mention putting some sort of base on it? Otherwise, it really would kind of tilt and you have to hold on to that bowl.
You'd have to hold on to that bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you could probably make some sort of flat thing that it could affix to almost.
All you'd have to do would be hot glue a mason jar lid to the bottom.
Yeah.
And then you've got a base.
Hey, yeah. That's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great idea.
Just hot glue that on there and you've got a base that won't move.
You're all full of ideas. We should do a show about this sometime.
I'd love to.
That'd be a good idea. what I would do with the globes is take them off the stands, first of all. Cut a... You know, it's another lamp idea, because that's what I seem to make is lamps.
Yes.
But I have two ideas here. One's a lamp, one's not a lamp. I'll go with the lamp first, because we were just talking about. Take the thing off the base, cut a hole in it, get your LED light in there and affixed as a, like a pendant type deal. This would hang from the ceiling.
That's what I did.
I know, but I would. But here's what I would do.
Okay.
Beyond that, I wouldn't cut it in half.
You would just.
I would just. I would just hang it. Get it so you can get the light bulb in there and get it affixed so it hangs as a full globe. And here's what I would do. I would then take a drill or a sharp object, a nail or something. Your best bet would be just a nice drill.
Drill bit.
A nice tight drill bit, small drill bit. And I would go around the countries. This will take a little bit of time and drill around the continents.
Oh, that's cool.
And then when you light it up, especially in the dark, you have a globe that lights up even in light. I'd maybe put it like in a dimly lit room. For more effect. So you can still see the continents, but then it outlines the continents and it's kind of a neat, like, oh, look at that. So that's idea number one.
Okay.
Idea number two for this would be leave it on the stand as is, but paint that thing up with chalkboard paint.
Yeah.
Literally not. You could do either or. I mean, really. But for this application, it would be chalkboard paint, black chalkboard paint. I suppose you could do the green if you want, whatever your style. But I would do the chalkboard paint and I would make it into like a family note center. Essentially, you could put it at the end of the kitchen counter, by the front door, whatever. It's someplace where I went out to get groceries. This is what we used to do before we texted each other everything.
We left notes.
We left notes. And you can teach your children about how life was 10 years ago. And that's what I think it could be, a really neat little thing. And you could put, or just a little note to, maybe not even necessarily, I went to get groceries. Maybe you're going to text that regardless. But maybe you can leave a nice note for your family or something. Like, I love you. I made Rice Krispie squares, but the dog ate them, so you're screwed. Something like that. you go into the house and there's the globe and it's just kind of the family message thing.
Yeah.
You could also do just the chalk paint, the regular old, I'd do the black chalk paint on it. And then you could put whatever saying you want on it. And you could put it on there and, you know, really, I don't know the right word for this, but, you know, the calligraphy type letters or something.
Yeah.
Then that could be just kind of a neat little piece.
There's different ways to find the fonts and easy to copy that.
Yeah, like
your handwriting.
Like live, laugh, love, whatever the hell you want to put on there. You know, and then that would just be, it's a neat piece and it's an unexpected piece to have that on. Those are things that you typically see framed in on walls, on boards, just on the wall with the, whatever it is,
the vinyl
decals on a globe is not necessarily expected. It'd be a little more tricky because it is round. So you probably have to paint it, you know? But I think that could be a neat piece.
That could be cool.
So there's an idea. So there's my globe ideas. I have something that's not a light. Aren't you proud of me?
That was good. That was real good.
So that is some of the letters that we have today. We have one more letter that we'll get to at the end of the show. It just came in literally today. So you're not even aware of this one.
Oh, you're putting me on the spot.
It's going to be a pop
quiz.
Junk. I don't know. Window shutters. This is something that a project that we did not that long ago. Let me pull that picture up. We were afraid of storms and decided to make shutters that don't close.
No.
This is just a nice little accent that we ended up doing to the house. Go ahead and talk about them and how you created these shutters. I'm showing the pictures from the front of the house that we have up.
Well, we painted our brick. So when you do that.
Which is on next week's episode, by the way.
Yeah.
How to paint brick and why it's a cool idea.
I really wanted to not lose character by doing that because obviously the front of the house is now all the same color. So I needed some contrast and I thought the best way to do that would be to make shutters. And the reason I chose to make them is because the design that I liked for our house that fit the architecture is very simple. So I went with a craftsman style shutter. So this is just a board and batten style.
Mm-hmm.
It is literally 3 2x6s. And a 2x4 cross piece.
Mm-hmm.
And you cut them to the length of your window. And I like to make mine a little on the wider side to where they look like they could close if you needed to. I think it looks kind of silly when your shutters are way too skinny for the size of your window.
Or too big.
or too big. They need to be comparable, you know, as far as do they look like they could close and cover the window.
Sure.
So it's very simple. You just cut those 3 2x6s and you cut them the same length. And then you cut 2 of the 2x4s or the same 2x4, but you cut 2 pieces from it to go across those 2x6s. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard for me to describe, but I know that the picture shows it very well.
How much would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood?
And you just use the screws to each board for each slat. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, to really affix it good so it's not going to flip around or anything on you.
Right, because if you use one, then the whole thing can wobble.
Yeah, so exactly. So you don't want that because it will very easily do that.
Yes.
We've experienced that.
We did. Yeah. We just put one through each board into the cross piece and did that for the top and bottom, and they started to slide.
Yeah, so two is needed.
And then we actually used a masonry bit and just drilled right through the shutters, right through the brick, into the brick, and fixed them that way. Mm-hmm. And the decorative pieces on there are actually vinyl. It was a very inexpensive kit from Amazon, and it's the hinges, and those are called shutter dogs. Those are designed at the bottom. Those in the South are used to hold shutters back, and when you're not, you know, closing up your shutters for a hurricane, and when you are, you turn them, and then you can close your shutters.
Not to be confused with shutter cats or shutter squirrels, which are a totally different item.
And they're spelled shutter dogs, D-A-W-G-S.
Okay, there's a lot of odd spellings on today's show that are...
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, what up, dog?
It is,
it's like,
it is.
Shutter dogs. Is that kind of how you... is that how you're supposed to say it? Are you just doing it like really properly? Like, they're shutter dogs. At the store, if I were to go to Lowe's and be like, do you have shutter dogs? They'd look at me like, what?
They would not know.
And then I have to be like, I'm sorry, sir. Do you have shutter dogs?
They would
then
not
they'll be
know.
Like, shit, yeah, it's over there.
No.
Okay.
No, but it's just decorative. Mine don't twist. They're just screwed right onto the shutter itself.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Well, there you go. It really is an easy thing to do. We've done these a couple times now, and a lot of, you know, trial and error on some of this stuff. But the two screws is a good tip.
Yeah.
It's like two scoops. What was the cereal in the 80s where it was like two? Was that Raisin Bran?
I think so.
Or was it Total? Remember Total?
I don't know.
It takes 4,000 bowls of Raisin Bran to equal one bowl of Total.
I don't eat either.
Do you remember that? It was like then the guy was sitting on the bowls of cereal and they'd fly into the sky and his head would go through the ceiling and you'd get like decapitated.
I remember the two scoops thing, but I couldn't eat one scoop of that shit.
Blood would be like dripping into the cereal and kids are supposed to want to eat this. Okay, it didn't go that far.
Nope.
It did in my world. So there you go. That's how to make some very easy, inexpensive shutters for your windows. I mean, really... Because buying these things are not cheap to buy them.
No.
You know, and then to find ones that are at your right size, a lot of times it's probably have to be somewhat customized.
Yeah. You'd have to order them. Yeah. It's very, you can find shutters in flea markets and antique malls. And the chances of finding
the right type, right size.
The right type, the right size, and the number of them that you need.
Good luck.
Yeah.
So to make them, I mean, we're talking a couple of very cheap boards here. We're talking some very cheap hardware here. Mm-hmm. 10, 15 bucks a shutter, maybe?
Yeah, about
at that? Yeah, okay. Yeah, so not bad at all. All right, product review, and then one more letter. We're going to talk about grout color. When your grout looks like someone threw up all over the floor and you just can't quite get it out.
Nope.
What do you do?
There's the easy way and there's the hard way.
Mm-hmm.
The hard, sucky way is to get that grout out and regrout it.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to do that. And if the grout's in good shape, there's no reason to.
Sure.
If it's not chipping and popping out anyway, if it's in good shape, it's just ugly. There's a product for that. Do you have a picture of the bottle?
It's a product for everything. No, but no.
You hold it, Vanna.
I'm about to go to you for you to hold the product.
I don't know where to hold it.
Here, hand it to me. I'll hold it.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to do inappropriate things with it now. You asked for it, though.
Okay. Grout Renew by Polyblend. And this is a product I picked up at Home Depot. that's terrible. Don't do that.
It's horrible, isn't it?
Yes. And $13 for a bottle. And when we did the laundry room at the last house, we used one bottle. We did two coats because it was super dark and gross. Mm-hmm. And we wanted it to be white. And there's probably 15, 20 different shades of this stuff. So you can, you know, pick any color you want. If you want to take your grout and go dark with it, you can do that. Or if you want to take grody grout and make it look clean, you can do this. Because mm-hmm. you can clean grout, but it still looks dingy. You're still laughing about your inappropriate.
I have a whole other inappropriate thing that just came to mind.
You're terrible with my ADD. I tell you that.
50 Shades of Grout.
50 Shades of Grout. That's great. Okay.
All the things you can do inappropriately with one bottle of grout.
It's a great product. I'm sure that anybody that we mentioned, Polyblend and Home Depot, are going to really appreciate this post. So
it's a good product.
It's a good product. Yeah. Did you show the before and after?
I did show the before and after.
And it's not necessarily the funnest task because you have to take a small paintbrush and you paint on the grout. And then if you get it on the tile, if you wipe it while it's wet, it comes right off. It's fine. But it saves you a lot of pain and agony of having to replace the grout.
And you apply it. How did you apply it specifically?
I just used a small paintbrush that was about the width of my grout joint, which, you know, if you're doing a small backsplash grout joint, you're going to use a very fine brush. But this
doesn't require like a Q-tip or something to get in there. Just a small brush.
A small paintbrush is going to be your best bet.
And a steady hand.
It doesn't have to even be a steady hand.
Really?
If you get it all over the tile, just wipe the tile.
Okay.
And it stays on the grout, but it will come off the smooth sealed surface. The good thing about this is it also acts as a sealant, so you do not have to seal after doing this.
That's nice.
Yeah.
So it's kind of all in one.
It is all in one.
Cool. All right. Good product. Polyblend, 50 Shades of Grout.
That's great.
If I were the marketing person for them, that would totally make a display that says, like, just in that same sort of font as the movie, 50 Shades of Grout, and then have the grout colors on below it.
I think most of the people buying this are probably guys.
That's probably true. And they're going to be like, oh, my girlfriend liked that movie or that book. And they'll be like getting the grout and they'll be confused. They'll be like, I bought that grout that you've been watching on TV. It's like, it's not a grout I've been watching.
No.
You know nothing about me. I hate you. And then it would be.
Okay.
So that would go. So, okay. One more letter here on today's episode, and then we're going to wrap it up. Hi, Jen and Tony. I gone on Pinterest and asked around, and I'd like Jenny's advice on this. Don't have a picture. Asked around and then had the thought, why was I not asking you to? I had picked up a metal weather vane type thing at a Cranberry Festival for, this is like a fall festival, for a wall at work that I've been working on to hang. Only thing I could find at the festival was a black metal decoration. They would like to have me make it white. I'm planning on spray painting it white, but how can I get it to look like weathered looking? What else can I do, or what can I do to it to make it look this way? I do not have it here at home for a picture, sorry. It's black with a little bit of gold to give it a little weathered look right now, but I had thought that it may not be too hard to change it over. Any thoughts on this, like a weathered look, rustic, something like that?
Okay, what I would do, it depends on what you mean by weathered. Weathered meaning it's starting to show kind of grime and the crevices to really, you know, accent the detail on there. That's one way to go. The other way to go is to make it look like the paint's peeling off, and it's two different processes.
Okay, let's go through both.
Okay, if the paint, you want it to look like it's kind of chipping off, this is the Vaseline trick I talked about. You take Vaseline on a Q-tip and you touch it to the areas that you don't want the paint to adhere to, so it looks like the paint has chipped off of those spots over time. And then I would use, actually, instead of spray paint, I would use chalk paint. And you can get, you know, any brand of chalk paint would work. I would just go with a white that, you know, you can get that at, you know, craft store. You can get it at a big box store, whatever.
Fleet Farm, if you're in Wisconsin.
I don't know if Fleet Farm
I don't know if they'd have it or not.
Menards does.
Yeah.
So I would use chalk paint, paint over it. And then after the chalk paint dries, then you go back and you wipe where the Vaseline had been. So you'll probably have to wipe over the whole thing because you're going to probably remember where you put the Vaseline all over it. But the paint that's on top of the Vaseline will not have adhered to the weather vane. So you wipe it and it comes off and it looks like it's chippy and old.
Okay.
The other way to make it look old is I would paint the whole thing white and then I would put a clear coat on it. Clear coat could be polycrylic. You could even do clear wax, which goes with chalk paint.
Paint it white with spray paint or hand paint?
I would use chalk paint.
Okay. So like with a brush, chalk paint.
Yeah.
Okay.
And chalk paint adheres to metal just fine. Sure. So that's not going to be a problem. You probably have to do two coats because you're going white over black.
Okay.
Once you do that, then... And you've got the clear coat on there. Then I would use the brown wax that you can, you know, you'll find it where the chalk paints are. It's the antiquing wax or brown wax, depending on the brand that you buy.
Okay.
A little bit goes a long way. I would just take a little bit and kind of dab it around. You could even use a Q-tip for this and get it really in those crevices where the detail work is on the weather vane. And then you wipe it off and it will stay, the brown will stay in those crevices, but it will wipe off on the raised pieces.
So a little dab will do you.
Yeah. And it looks like years of, you know,
corrosion,
dirt and corrosion from being on top of a barn.
Sure.
And it will really show out when you have it on the wall. It will really show off that the detail work on that.
Cool. There you go.
Those are what I would do.
Those are two ideas to give it that look beyond just spray painting it, you know, because that used to be something a lot of people would do. I think before this advent of chalk paint and the other things that people have been doing to really make things look rustic without, you know, beating the hell out of something, you know.
And I'll give you a little heads up. Probably next week, my product I want to review is a spray chalk paint.
Oh, really? I didn't know they made something of that nature.
They do. I'm going to get some. I'm going to try it out and let you all know what I think of
it. Who makes it?
Rust-Oleum.
I was just going to ask, is it a Rust-Oleum product?
It is.
They make like everything in a spray bottle.
They do. They also make, you know, the regular pints of chalk paint. And I've been pretty happy with their pints that I've used. So I'm going to actually get a spray can and try it out.
It'd be awesome is if Rust-Oleum... You know, because when you're making stuff and you're using the spray cans and you're sitting there for, you know, a long time, hours and doing stuff, you get kind of worn out. If they also did a spray cheese as well, where you could do the spray stuff and then, okay, done with this. And then.
I think somebody else already has the market cornered. I think maybe it's Cheese Whiz.
They could do it better. I think Rust-Oleum has raised the bar on spray paint so many times. I think they could raise the bar on Cheese Whiz.
Your just love as much. Of processed cheeses should be an embarrassment to Wisconsin.
Are you kidding me? I mean, the funny part is I grew up in Wisconsin. And most of the cheeses I ate as a child were simply processed cheeses. I did not realize there was many other cheeses out there until I left the state.
Well,
it's what we grew up. I mean, I don't know why it is or what it is. And maybe it was just my family. I don't know. But for a long time, I'd say as an adult in the mid 90s, early 90s or 2000s, going to the grocery store, it was really hard to find much beyond a processed block of cheese.
Okay.
I thought that's all there was. And then like slowly, then like kind of the Food Network stuff picked up and people started realizing there's things beyond just this. I just don't think there was a demand for it.
Well, and being a kid, you probably didn't have a taste for that kind of stuff.
No, and I know the state's always produced more than that, but I don't think they had a market for it in the state for a long time until people like the world of food kind of exploded. And then suddenly people are like, oh my God, we want something beyond blocks of cheddar.
I just don't think of Velveeta and Cheese Whiz when... You know, thinking Wisconsin.
No, there was a lot of that, but there was also, I mean, just, you know, we had like, I thought, you know, cheddar is just strictly the rectangle and mozzarella is just the rectangle. When I discovered the fresh mozzarella, the balls of mozzarella, like in water or freshly made, like, what the hell is that? Why is it in a ball? Why is it not in a brick? You
know? Yeah.
It's a weird thing.
It is.
For being the cheese state, but I'm sure it's different now. I think kids growing up there now probably have a very different outlook on what cheese is.
Okay.
But in the 90s, not so much.
There you go.
Lunchable cheese. That's what you get.
Gross.
So it kind of was. The ham was the worst in Lunchables.
That is. It was slimy.
I know.
Every time.
I couldn't Yeah, just get the shivers thinking about it. All right, that wraps up today's episode of Junkin' with Jenny. If you want some advice on your products, your ideas, or your rooms, your spaces, your products, I don't know. If you have a product you want us to review, you can email us as well. Send it to us through our website at junkinwithjenny.com. Places, spaces, things. We'll talk about it on the show and give you some feedback. And you can maybe use it if you like it. So, junkinwithjenny.com. That wraps up the episode. Thank you guys for watching. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. That's Jenny Bruschi. Oh, that way. I got to point that way because the way the camera splits.
Okay.
And have a great rest of your day. Thanks for watching.